There's folks that you can have a direct booking website, right? But again, short-term basically means you're allowing people to stay in your property for 30 days or less. That's kind of how it's defined. Obviously, long-term is 30 days or more. What I liked about it again is really the ability to step in based on the amount of investment and risk you want to take.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Hey everyone, I'm Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. On this week's episode, we're gonna talk all things short-term rentals. So think Airbnb, VRBO. Our guest today, his name is Ed Lemus, and he's a good friend of mine. He's been in the real estate industry for over 20 years. He's done a little bit of everything from wholesale, fix and flip, buy and hold, multifamily, and now he's really focused on short-term rentals. And so on this episode, anyone that's interested in short-term rentals, I would get out a notepad and take some notes because he gives some great actionable items, the strategies you can implement, how to get in, how to find the right deals, how to do that market research and due diligence. And particularly for me and other multifamily operators out there, specifically the ones of larger scale properties, but you really can do it at any size property. But he gets into how he has implemented the short-term rentals in larger apartment complexes, how they can kind of juice your overall returns. And he's doing it on smaller scale in terms of percentage of the property. It's only 1 to 3 units per complex, but he has it over several different complexes. And he's doing this both at properties where him and his partner own, and then also properties where he doesn't own. And so he gets in how to do that. What are the benefits of all those strategies? This is a really good one and that I personally took notes. I'm going to look into implementing myself. So let's get into this one. Hey, Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey, my friend, how are you? Great to be here. Appreciate the time.
Hey, I appreciate your time jumping on here and talk all things short-term rentals. So let's just get right into it. Just give us a brief background on your story, where you grew up, how you got into what you're doing now, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, thanks for having me on, Sean. I appreciate it. I guess short story, I've been in real estate in some form or fashion for probably over 20 years now. So graduated from college, did the traditional get a good job, good corporate job, which by the way, I still have. I have the luxury of working from home, so it allows a lot of flexibility. So I've always had some sort of side hustle, and 9 out of 10 times that's always been real estate related. So I started off in fix and flip way back when it wasn't even a thing. There wasn't even, I hate to admit it, there wasn't a lot of online stuff. So it was a lot of kind of learn as you go process. So I did that. Some of those fix and flips kind of flopped. So they turned into long-term rentals. So I got into the long-term rental game kind of by accident. I actually still have some of those properties, all single family homes. And then fast forward, again, having the corporate job the entire time, I jumped into wholesaling and have always really been systems driven. So not having a lot of time to go chase leads or what have you, I just got really good at honing systems and creating demand generation systems, right? Whether it was direct mail or email marketing or cold calling. So I would build the systems and then I would partner with other investors here locally. I'm in San Antonio, Texas. I would partner with other investors who didn't have the systems background or the discipline, if you would, because it takes a lot of discipline just to run all that. So along with myself, and I always had a virtual assistant or two by my side, kind of helping me run the day-to-day operations, I was basically just spinning up leads. So that's kind of how it evolved. And then I actually met Sean through a mutual multifamily mastermind that we were a part of. So I did a little bit of multifamily syndication. So I played in that space for a little bit. And then again, I kind of fell back toward the career, the corporation, right? A little more demanding a couple of years back. I've also married with 2 children, 10 and 6. So they keep me very, very busy. So all that said, I ended up again, partnering with one of the gentlemen that I actually was producing wholesale leads. For those of you that don't understand or have never heard the term wholesale, it's basically finding off-market properties from motivated sellers that are looking to offload their property for a deep discount, right? So we basically get it under contract. We put a fee on top of it and then we wholesale it to an end buyer. So that gentleman said, hey, I actually just locked in on a 30 unit apartment complex down in the valley, South Texas, near the Mexico border. And we've got a couple of units that are vacant. Do you want to try this Airbnb thing, which we have tossed around since like we set up an LLC in 2017. That shows you how long ago I said, hey, short-term rentals. So I finally, we dusted off the LLC and said, hey, let's get into it. So that's how we started. We basically again, kind of fumbled our way through understanding it, right? We put it on the Airbnb platform. We started that in October of 2019. And now we have 6 units that are live, and we're about to go live with our 7th unit, which will be our first single family home. All the 6 units that we have down in McAllen, Texas, which is south of where I live. Again, I run all the back end systems along with my virtual assistant. Those have been live, like I said, probably for right at 2 years now, but this one will be the first one we do here in San Antonio. So I'll take a breath there and see if you have any questions or
No, that's awesome, Matt. Thanks. I guess I've never talked short-term rentals on the show before. So I guess just jump into why you like them and the kind of the benefits of short-term rentals versus a more like traditional long-term year plus rental.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that really drew me to that strategy was the fact that as an individual, there's really 3 different ways you can play in that space. Again, assuming that you're going to be the short-term rental person. And right now we're just on the Airbnb platform. Obviously there's bookings.com, there's VRBO or Vrbo, whichever way you want to say that. There's folks that you can have a direct booking website, right? But again, short-term basically means you're allowing people to stay in your property for 30 days or less. That's kind of how it's defined. Obviously, long-term is 30 days or more. What I liked about it again is really the ability to step in based on the amount of investment and risk you want to take. So starting at the very low end, low risk tolerance, low investment, there's something called rental arbitrage, which is basically a fancy term that says, or that's also known as a master lease. So in our situation, I mentioned we're in apartment complexes. We're basically doing rental arbitrage. We're going in and we're signing a lease with our LLC on the line for the monthly rent. So that's what we're on the hook for, is that monthly rent and then the lease term. In our case, we kind of cheated because my partner has ownership in pretty much all the complexes that we're playing in. So we really are doing it month to month. But even in another scenario where you sign maybe a 6-month lease or maybe a year lease, again, as the operator, you have your skin in the game is really the lease term that you've signed up for, right? Because you're on the hook for the rent. And then also what it costs to furnish it. So what's nice about it, again, these are 1-bedroom, well, 5 of the 6 are 1-bedroom, 1-bath. So very, very low investment. I think we've gotten pretty good at standing one up for like $3,500, right? Get very creative, Facebook Marketplace, offer up those kind of things and get gently used items for like bedding and all that kind of stuff, right? Not the bedding piece, sorry, the actual frames and all that stuff. So you can get in that way. That's one way. The other way is, and the more traditional way is, hey, I'm going to buy a house. You have the choice of going long-term rentals with it or short-term, right? A little bit bigger risk, right? As long as you run the numbers and it's going to work as a long-term rental, which I always suggest, right? Because that's your fallback. If for whatever reason, the short-term piece doesn't work out, maybe you can't get it booked, maybe regulations change, you at least know you can fall back on long-term and you're still making money and covering your mortgage, plus hopefully making some cash flow. So those are the 2. And then the 3rd one is just a straight co-hosting, which is probably the lowest risk, where I go in and I say, hey, Sean, I understand you have a property. Are you interested in partnering with me and doing short-term rentals in your property? In that case, we're sharing, we decide how we structure that. But typically I would charge a management fee anywhere from 15 to 25% of the overall revenue. That's what it's in it for me. For you, I'm guaranteed or close to guarantee at least 3 times what you would get on a traditional long-term rental agreement from a regular tenant. So I like it because you get really, really creative. There's 3 different entry points. And at the end of the day, the profitability is much, much better than a long-term rental.
Yeah, I do know that the returns are much higher, obviously, with some risk there. Out of those 3 entry points, which one do you like the best? Is there one that kind of has like an optimal risk reward versus the others?
Yeah, I would say kind of what's your end goal, right? The ideal one is the buy, right, hold, and then short-term rent. Because then you're getting, not only are you getting the increased income, right? Because you're charging nightly rates versus a standard kind of monthly lease amount, right? But then you're also getting appreciation and depreciation, which you don't get in the other 2 models, right? Rental arbitrage is basically just, it's a lease, the co-host, you don't own the property. So if at all possible, if you can own the property, that's probably the ideal way to do it, right? Because you're getting all the benefits, increased cash flow, appreciation, depreciation, and you own the physical asset. So I really like that one. But again, as you know, you can not fairly quickly, depends how much money you have, but you could pretty quickly run out of money doing that strategy. So co-hosting is pretty nice. Again, knowing that you're going to basically share in the profits and you're on the hook for making sure that all those things are kind of humming along, right? And take care of the guests and all that fun stuff, which is what you're responsible for. So from a risk perspective, I would say co-hosting is probably the least amount of risk.
Okay, that's what I figured. I just wanted to get your opinion on that. But what I think is really cool about it, the way you can set it up and what I believe separates kind of the best short-term rental, I don't know if users is the right term, versus the ones that aren't as successful. So I would say the ones that set it up as a business. I know you mentioned a little earlier that you take care of kind of the back end, and just like in any business, the back end of a business, there needs to be system processes in place that can run things as efficient as possible. And so if you wouldn't mind just jumping into that, kind of how you set that back end up and just kind of your opinion on what makes it run optimal and give you the best return.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes back to, so you have a great point there, right? Because there are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of hosts out there. And I'll speak specifically to Airbnb. And Airbnb, by the way, was born, I'll give you a little trivia. So the Air in Airbnb is actually for air mattress. That's how it started. It was, hey, I'm going to rent my air mattress in my loft and I'm going to charge people to stay. But it started out as giving people an experience and a local feel, right? So that's kind of how it started. And it's obviously evolved from there. So you have people jumping into the space. By the way, the other model I didn't talk about, which there's people that obviously that rent a room in their house, or they maybe have a detached garage that they've converted, right? Which is great for extra income. I know quite a few operators in town that have that. And they're there to give the local experience. They want to meet the guest. They want to provide that local kind of warmth.
Kind of like a B&B.
To the guest, a true B&B, right? Yeah. Which is how that started. So again, depending on what your goal is, my goal obviously is, certainly I want to provide a 5-star, right? Which is Airbnb's highest rating, a 5-star guest experience, but I'm going to do that out of my LLC, right? I'm going to, for various reasons, right? Primarily legal reasons, you want to be structured correctly. But at the end of the day, you're absolutely right. It's all about systems and processes. So there's really, I look at it, there's probably 5 things that would make you or make for a successful host, right? Again, you're going to have the mom and pop that say, hey, I just want a little extra income, or hey, I want to meet some new people. Because I have a lot of the friends that do that. But again, if you're looking at it from a business perspective, right, you want to look at the location. With that, you also kind of have to open your eyes and mind to the fact that in most cases, if I say Airbnb, most people think vacation rentals, right? And they equate one with the other. There absolutely is a big draw for vacation rentals. The 6 that we have down in South Texas, nobody wants to go there on vacation. It's not a vacation destination, but it is serves a different, what I call a guest avatar, right? So we're near a medical center. So especially with COVID, we really pivoted because it hit us. I mean, I think we had just launched our 3rd one when COVID hit. So it crushed us. We were getting booking cancellations and Airbnb, don't get me started, wasn't the best to host at that time. So we were kind of left holding the bag here. So we ended up pivoting and started to market outside of the platform to healthcare professionals, right? Traveling nurses, because we knew they needed a place to stay, right? And in these times, right, people want their own space. So it worked out really well. And we ended up turning that whole corner and getting even longer term stays. So right now, our average stay is around 10 days, which is above the average because we get healthcare professionals. And again, when you talk about avatars, right, you have military, you have people that are traveling on just regular business, those type of things. So that's the other thing to consider. Who is it that you're marketing to? Who's that guest avatar that you're going to serve? And it could be a number of them, but that's one. So you want to set up. So this goes back to kind of the success. Where's the property? What are the amenities? We have a workstation. Obviously, we have Wi-Fi and smart TVs in all our locations. We make it very user-friendly for folks that are wanting to. We get students down there, right, that are doing rotations through the medical schools down there. So we make it that way. We have blackout curtains in the bedrooms, right? Because we have nurses at work nights and sleep days. It's those little things that make a big, big difference, right? So who's the guest that you're going to serve and how do you best serve them? Location, again, is important, but for the most part, it's what are the amenities that you have? As an example, we're going to cater to families. Hey, like we're standing one up here in San Antonio. It'll be our first one. We're looking to one of our guest avatars, military, right? San Antonio is known as Military City. So we're going to have a pack and play, a high chair, right? These are families that are coming in. So again, just make it very, very accommodating to that guest avatar. Aside from that, you want to have your, what I'll call your operational systems in line, right? So it's all about guest experience, right? From the minute that they book to the minute that they check out. So communication is key. So I have a full-time virtual assistant that does all my communications, right? So we have, like I said, about to have 7 units. So you can imagine how many check-ins and check-outs. She coordinates our cleaning team, right? Your cleaning team is the lifeblood, right? So that's another key piece in that whole operation, right? That you want to make sure you have locked in. But messaging is, again, huge, right? You want to make sure that you're prompt and that you're taking care of issues, those type of things. You make it easy for the guests to check in and check out. So everything is pretty much digitized. So we have keyless entry, right? We have codes that we send the guest upon check-in. They check out, the code changes. We're ready for the next guest, that type of thing. So all those things are kind of built in. I like to call it you optimize, right? So there are different messaging systems that we have in place that automate messaging, right? So if somebody's asking me for a Wi-Fi code, I have an automated, it's called SmartBnB. They just changed the name to Hospitable, but it basically says, if it says Wi-Fi in their message to me, it'll send them the Wi-Fi code automatically. It's all artificial intelligence and it's pretty good. So again, my VA kind of oversees it just to make sure we're handling things. But for the most part, if it's anything to do with the AC or the lock or anything, we have automated messages that make sure that we're getting back to the guest on time. So that's one piece of the automation. The other is around pricing, right? So Airbnb offers what they call their smart pricing tool. But again, I always say, hey, go with a third party because Airbnb, their goal is to get more bookings. How do you get more bookings? You lower the price. So there are dynamic pricing tools out there that you can integrate with your listings to make sure that just like an airline or a hotel, right? On if I check airline tickets today, they might be very different tomorrow, might be very different the next day. They're using dynamic pricing. There are tools out there, third-party tools that you can integrate that help you do that for your own listing. So that's another key piece. So those are just some of the things I think that would kind of set you up for success and some of the things that you can, again, automate and or delegate if you have a virtual assistant, which is, I think, definitely a game changer when you get beyond 3 or 4 units. It's really, really hard to manage by yourself.
Yeah. When you scale, that becomes a full-time job just itself from like the corresponding guests and cleaning and all that. So I can see how important that would be to automate that stuff. When it pertains to kind of like the big apartment complexes, thinking from my background, do you utilize the existing staff on the property to kind of do some of those turns or in terms of the like clean the room and get ready for the next guest?
Yeah, typically that's the value add that I bring to the apartment owner is, hey, now obviously if it's a maintenance issue, then we're going to use, right, just like a regular tenant would say, hey, my AC is not blowing cold air or not heating or whatever. We're going to leverage those resources on site because for all intents and purposes, a tenant, right? But anything that having to do with the actual guest experience, i.e. cleaning, towels, linens, whatever, coffee, all the usable things that we put in the unit, that's all on us. And again, that's the value add, right? I like to say, hey, I'm your perfect tenant. I'm not going to call you. We typically handle any little maintenance issues too. If it's a scuff on a door or a towel rack gets pulled off the wall, we typically just send our handyman and we take care of all that and we cover the cost and we're not passing that cost to the apartment complex. So they like that, right? Because they're not kind of nickel and dime or bothering them with a lot of things. So I think that's one of the benefits of us coming in is, like I say, the perfect tenant, right? By the way, we're also going to keep the unit pretty darn close to how we went into it, right? Because we typically do obviously a turn, a cleaning turn every time a guest checks out. And then we block a day on the calendar every 90 days to do a deep clean, just to make sure that everything's good. And that point, we check all, make sure that everything's working and change out batteries and do all that stuff, just kind of to make sure we're not having any issues, any preventable issues, making sure furniture, because things get broken and sometimes hidden. So our cleaning team is kind of glowing and blowing. So during that deep clean, we do an inspection, kind of a quality inspection. Most tenants aren't going to do that, right? Or no tenants are going to do that. So that's, again, the benefit having us in one of the units.
That's really nice. Just kind of like a all-in-one service and the owner management of that big property doesn't have to worry about it. I know most of yours are with kind of your partner who has some ownership in the property, but in terms of what you're hearing in the market, is there pushback from kind of these apartment owners, these complex owners in terms of like, now we don't really want that type of stay here, or do you have to pay like a premium on the rent to kind of get in there? What are your thoughts on that? What's going on in the market? Because I know the rental market, just like anything in real estate, is super hot right now.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we have kind of gone outside of our own complexes. So one of the units is actually two of our units are at a complex that we don't own. And yeah, we did go in and say, hey, we're going to offer you, it wasn't much, $100 extra a month on the lease. And in most cases, if you approach them from, hey, are you familiar with corporate leases, right? That's typically a company leasing a property, right, where they're going to have their own people go through there. And you approach it from that perspective and use vernacular that they're used to. If you go in and say, hey, I want to run an Airbnb out of here, and you start there, you're going to get the Heisman 9 out of 10 times because they say, oh, I don't want any Yahoo in here throwing parties and pissing off my tenants, right? But if you go in from it, hey, we work with companies, and which we do, right? Now we have a lot of repeat customers for like AT&T comes to mind, some of the bigger infrastructure folks that are putting their laying fiber optic cable down in South Texas or whatever they're doing, and they want a place for their employees to go. So now they have us on the list and they come to us, right? We're comparable to a hotel, in some cases a little bit better. Their employee is much happier because they get their own space. So it's a benefit to them. But again, if you approach it from that perspective, and then obviously it's not a corporate lease, so you want to be very upfront and just start the conversation then and say, if you're familiar with corporate leases, it pretty much works the same way. And 9 out of 10 times, you're going to ask questions like, well, how do I know who's staying in there? That's the big one. How do I know it's not a criminal or whatever? Well, so that's when you have to go into, hey, Airbnb does these background checks and we do our own checks as well, right? We require government IDs be verified through Airbnb. So we typically do the vetting on the front end too. We don't take every reservation. It's a little bit challenging because there's literally thousands of people that are still coming onto that Airbnb platform on a daily basis. So you can't just say, hey, well, he just started on Airbnb last month. How do I know he or she's legit? So we have to just do a little bit of vetting and back and forth, what brings you to the area, that kind of thing. Make sure that they kind of meet and check all the boxes, right? That they have a profile picture, they have an email, a phone number, and a government ID uploaded. So we do as much as we can to vet the particular guest. So once you talk through those things with the landlord or the apartment complex owner, I think you can get past a lot of the objections. And they say, hey, by the way, let's just do a 3-month trial and see how it works, right? Just to kind of get started. But yeah, offering them a premium sometimes is something you have to go to just to get a chance to get your foot in the door.
Right. And obviously, you're getting a higher return on short-term rentals, so you can some room to do that. That's really smart. I like that strategy of not going in completely straightforward and being like, I'm looking to do short-term rentals, start off kind of like you're familiar with corporate rentals, blah, blah, blah. I like that. I think that's a great strategy for anyone who is trying to do that as well. Kind of talk about, I guess, your kind of experience in the sense of where you kind of see this going. Because I know we've talked about this offline before, kind of how it all depends on the market. And you've got to be very careful where you're trying to do this because there's different state and city guidelines and laws. So I don't know if you could just touch on that and where you kind of see like the optimal place to kind of do this, whether it be in an apartment complex or another strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that's one of kind of the things that you have to consider is we started down in South Texas because there are no regulations. So it's wild, wild west down there. It's whatever, you know, they're not regulated. Here in San Antonio, we didn't start here because there are regulations and they just kicked in like 2019. So a lot of cities and municipalities are jumping on this STR ordinance bandwagon for a number of reasons. One, you have people in neighborhoods that are saying, hey, I'm not next to my house kind of thing, right? So that's one. The other is, hey, I want to take the hotels and motels. They're not very happy, right? So hey, we're paying taxes. Why aren't they paying taxes? And then the city says, hey, another revenue stream. So that's what happened here in San Antonio. They put the ordinance in place. So there's really two pieces to it. One is you have to apply for a short-term rental permit. Cheap. It's like a $100 application and it's good for 2 years. So without that, they can fine you up to like $500 a day if you're running one without it. So you got to make sure that you're covered there. You can simply Google, right, short-term rental regulations and fill in the blank city or wherever you're located just to see if there are anything there. And also, I would also recommend you call the city or whoever the local government agency is and say, hey, are there any short-term? I don't see anything online, but I just want to double check because you don't want to jump in there and then go, oh, crap, there are regulations and I'm out of regulation. I'm getting fined and or I can't do it. And now you've bought or lease or whatever, then you're on the hook, right? So your due diligence up front. The other one is hotel occupancy tax. So we'll be paying taxes as soon as this San Antonio one goes online. They require it's here, city and county, I think it's a total of 16%. So again, not small, it's not chump change. So you want to make sure again that you run the numbers and that you know that you can afford to pay that, right? And a little bit of that, if not all of it, gets passed on to the guest, right? Last time you checked out of the hotel, said, hey, I thought the rate was $99. Why am I getting a bill for X number? Well, it's because of all the different fees that get attached. So Airbnb is pretty user-friendly in that you can add those different fees, cleaning fees, hotel occupancy tax fees, and all that. So you can pass that on to the guest. So those are the two big ones. The other one you have to watch out for, sometimes people overlook, is homeowner association ordinances, right? So a lot of them have it written into their covenant that they do not allow short-term rentals. So again, be real careful on that one. That one will sneak up on you. Because, hey, I'm covered by the city. Yeah, well, the HOA is going to screw you in the end. If you set one up and they don't allow it, so make sure that you're watching. If you have an HOA and that you're in an HOA neighborhood, make sure to check off the boxes there and make sure that it's allowed, because that's another one that could bite you in the butt if you're not careful. So does that kind of cover the question?
Yes, those are great tips, because just like in anything, you want to do your due diligence first so you don't get put in a bad position. And I think those are really important, especially with, like you said, it all depends on where you're at in the country. There's different regulations wherever you are. I know a lot of places up here in the Northeast, more stringent guidelines and regulations than down where you are. So you just want to be careful and look out, look for those before you jump in. In terms of kind of like two primary guests you've kind of talked on, you got your vacationers, your tourists, and then you've got your kind of employment guests, people that are traveling for work. Do you kind of have a preference on that? Or also, where do you kind of see the market going? Is there, obviously at first it was more for the tourists, but I feel like it's kind of growing on the other side as well. So if you can just jump into that, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of goes back to I'll follow up a little bit on your previous question, because I think you also asked about kind of location. I think the more boxes your location checks off, the better. So I'll use San Antonio just because I live here and this is my market, but San Antonio checks off a lot of boxes, right? We're not Austin, which is right up the street, which is kind of the mini Silicon Valley, right? Where there are a lot of tech, but we have quite a few corporate organizations that have staked ground here, right? So a lot of call centers. We have USAA here, which is a big, obviously, insurance company. We also have, as I mentioned, Military City, right? So we have four military bases. We also have Six Flags theme park. We have SeaWorld. We have the Alamo. So we check off a lot of the boxes, right, as it relates to the different avatars, right? Because there's, and by the way, we also have Brooke Army Medical Center, which is one of the top rated trauma centers in the world and in the country, obviously. But so we get a lot of influx. So the one unit that we're standing up is off of our 35 corridor, which is, again, feeds into Austin and also is really close to Randolph Air Force Base, Brooke Army Medical Center. We have a couple of different sports teams here, the Spurs. So anyway, it checks off a lot of those boxes. So more boxes you can check off, the better. You can certainly cater to one, but if you can maybe target more than one, you're obviously going to be better off. So that really speaks to your point. I think we're really seeing, again, COVID, a lot of horrible things have happened, but it also has changed and been a big disruptor also, right? A lot of people like me although I was working from home before COVID, but a lot of people are now working from home. So guess what? They can work from wherever. So you're going to see a lot of non-vacation.
No,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or they're going to say, hey, well, I'll just go down to San Antonio and work from there and the family can go do whatever. So you're going to be, you have the ability to cater all these different people that are more nomadic in nature because their jobs have allowed them to do that now. So I think just it really goes back to the amenities that you provide. Location is somewhat important, but even the San Antonio area, right? Even if I was a few miles outside of the actual city, I think you're still good, right? I think people are just looking for a nice, comfortable place to stay, a nice, safe place to stay. And again, just the things that you put in it, if you're going to cater to families, right? You want to have board games and all those little things that you would like to have access to if you were traveling, right?
Oh, that's great. I see the benefit for what I do in owning an apartment complex. In certain markets, obviously, there's certain markets that are just super hot and vacancy is usually pretty high, but it's even just a great way to juice your return as well. It's not good enough where I'd want to manage it myself. So I want you to get into kind of like what your service does and like how you kind of offload that work and make it more streamlined for apartment owner and where they can find you and find more about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really that third model that I talked about, which is called co-hosting, right? So it's basically me coming in and providing. It's really like a management service, although it's obviously 100% focused at short-term rentals. So again, as an owner of the complex, right, I'm basically becoming I'll call it your perfect tenant. I may or may not sign a lease depending on the agreement that we have. Let's just say I sign a lease with you, and then I'm on the hook for whatever the agreed upon monthly lease is and the term. And that's it, right? From your perspective, we're done. And then I'll come in and basically I'm the tenant in that particular unit. The other scenario says, hey, Sean says, I really want to partake in some of these increased monthly income. It's monthly income revenue, right? Or income streams. That's where I say, okay, well, let's do this. And that's where I basically don't sign a lease. We're 100% partnered. And what ends up happening is, again, same kind of scenario. You're really not doing anything. I'm coming in and doing all the management. So I'll come in and I'll set it up. You may pitch in for furnishings and that type of thing, or maybe we split it. Again, it's all very custom on what we agree to. But ultimately, what ends up happening is I cut you a check at the end of the month and I say, I'm going to charge you. I typically charge 25% of gross revenue on a monthly basis, right? So again, to your point, I know I'm going to be able to make more than the average Joe doing short terms versus a regular lease. So I'll basically turn that particular property into a short-term property. And then I just run all the operations out of it, just like I normally would. And then for you, like I said, you're basically just collecting a check at the end of the month. I send you a report at the end of the month, say, hey, here's the guests that stayed. Here's the income that was generated. Here are the expenses. Here's my 20%. And here's your cut of that. So that's typically how it works. So there's really nothing from your perspective in this scenario that you would really have to do other than relish in the extra income that you're getting on a monthly basis.
Sounds like a win-win to me.
Yeah, for sure.
Where can people find out more about that and find you?
Yeah. So probably the easiest place to go is to edlenus.com. So edlenus.com. That has kind of a little bio on me and there's links to the different things. So there's a spot there too. I started about 3 months ago, a Facebook group called Your First Airbnb. So I was getting a lot of people saying, hey, how do you do it? Should I do it? What are the ins and outs? That kind of thing. So I thought, you know, I'll just create a Facebook group and just provide free content. So you're welcome to join that group and jump in there. I go live every Friday at 2 p.m. Central. And then I just teach something. I've had a couple of different guests on there. I had some friends that actually have a vacation rental in Hilton Head. So I'm just interviewing different people and kind of getting different perspectives to give people kind of different angles as to how they might approach it. But at the end of the day, I'm basically teaching you how to do it. And if you want to do it, you pretty much have everything you need based on what I'm teaching there. Or again, if you're looking to offload that and just want the increased revenue, kind of want a hands-off approach, then I offer co-hosting.
That's great. I'll make sure to put those links in the show notes so anyone interested can check it out. And I highly recommend anyone who's been interested in short-term rentals, Airbnb type stuff to go follow Ed because he knows his stuff. He's been doing it, put into work, and I know he's having a lot of success. Well, my friend, I just want to ask you one last question before I let you go. And that's kind of give the listeners kind of an actionable item. What's the first step they should do if they're looking to get into kind of short-term rentals or just real estate in general, whichever you prefer?
Yeah, I would say join my group. That would be step one. If short-term rentals is kind of what you're looking to do, again, Your First Airbnb is a group I started exactly for that. And I really did target a real estate investors because I have a lot of folks that are either real estate agents that have been buying property and doing long-term rental, and they want to do short-term, but they don't know how or where to start. That's really who the group is targeted for. So if you're really interested in that short-term piece and looking to see what it's like and how to do it, I would say join the group. The other is, again, I would say, again, specific to short-term rentals, right? That step one is going to be regulations, right? Understand, once you pick a market, understand what those regs are to make sure if they're going to be a deal breaker, you want to know that right off the bat. And then the other is, we didn't really talk about it, but when you're selecting a property, there's a few tools that you can use to run numbers before you even sign an agreement to buy or lease anything. And that's, you can use obviously Airbnb itself. So just do a search and see what people are charging. It's a little misleading in that you're going to see what their asking rate is, but you won't see what people are booking, but it gives you a good idea of what you can get. The other is AirDNA, which is, there's some free versions that are available, but that's basically a marketing company that gathers all the information from all the different short-term rental platforms, so Airbnb, VRBO, Expedia, all the different ones, and it gives you a market analysis, right? So you can run some numbers. And then again, when you get into it, there's Price Labs is one of the dynamic pricing tools that we use. It gives you, again, really good gauges on what the prices are. So I would say those are it. Find a resource, whether it's my group or somebody else's group, or join a mastermind that's focused on short-term rentals. And then again, just do your due diligence on the regulations and then also market research on pricing and what you can ultimately earn or not earn, right? Because those are going to be the two deal breakers for you.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that. I've actually used that AirDNA before. It's a pretty cool tool. So I would also recommend that as well. Well, thanks for coming on, Ed. I really appreciate your time. This has been a great show. I know I've learned a lot and definitely piqued my interest to look further into this and pick your brain some more.
Awesome, brother. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for the time and always great chatting with you, Sean.
All right. Take care, Ed. I'll see everyone next week.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.